Succession number 27060, Reel 6.
We'll talk about Creep shortly. What was the situation in relation to finally reaching the point where you could go no further? Oh, you were going to have to get on something to take you off.
Well, what...
Where was
it? I know it was Port O'Rafty, I think the name of the place was. But it's a funny thing about that. It always sticks in my mind. We come to the point where... We blew everything. We blew our vehicles. We run vehicles, drain the oil out of them, run them until they seized up and all this sort of thing. And then there was nothing. So we got organised and we just formed ourselves into groups underneath the olive trees. We were told what direction the Germans had come when they come, and we dug small trenches. And one thing about that I always remember. Groups of Greek women from the village come and say, "Oh, don't stay here, go away, go away, try and get away." But there were, we dug these little trenches and we got a few sandbags and sort of got ourselves ready, and then we just sat there and we waited for what was going to happen. I reckon I was, and I know my mates were resigned to the fact that we were cornered and we were going to have to fight it out. You know, that was our attitude. Well, here we are, we're cornered, and if they're going to come and take to us, we're going to do the best we can.
Can you describe to us how you disabled your guns and your vehicles?
Well, the guns, they took the breech blocks off them, and in some cases they put a shell down the barrel and blew them that way. But I think it was, they had to be careful that they weren't giving the message away that they were destroying everything. So mostly it was that they took the breech blocks off and carried them away. Some threw them in creeks and that sort of thing, and just disabled them that way, and punctured the tyres, and the vehicles were all drained of oil and run continuously until they seized up. You know, and it wasn't much that was any good, you know, that was left there. That all they would have needed new engines, or and the guns wouldn't have been any good to anybody, you know, by the time they'd remanufactured breech blocks, as the war had been well and truly over. Yeah. But that was the worst part of it, when you start destroying your own gear, you know, just the mere fact that you knew that once that was gone, all you were was yourself and what your small arms that you were carrying. So you were reduced to just that, you know.
And what did you have at
that point? Well, I had a Lewis gun. And most of us just had rifles and bayonets. I had a Lewis gun. Two of us had a Lewis gun three of us had a Lewis gun and a boy's anti-tank rifle. .303 each, you know. It's
how much ammunition did you have for yourself?
Oh, we had between us, I suppose. Well, I suppose we had we had 300 or 400 rounds between us, I suppose, or a bit, maybe more. It just, the point was that once you got to that situation, it was carrying the stuff, you know, from one place to another, and people don't realise that. You know, bullets are heavy things, and if you've got to cart them, heaps of them, you've got to have a pretty smart supply when you run out. Otherwise, that last day on Greece, I had a boy's anti-tank rifle, and I had a fellow with me called Teach Dean, and we'd taken the breech mechanism out of the anti-tank rifle, and he had that, and climbed up the side of this bloody Ajax and a bastard of a job with this boy's anti-tank rifle and a 303. Anyhow, I got it off and he come up 10 minutes later, I said, where's the breach mechanism for the boy's anti-tank roll? He said, I threw that away hours ago.
So he says, no, useless.
Bloody great boy's anti-tank rifle. I nearly threw him over the side.
Before you get onto the Ajax, I'm interested, did you hear of the parachute drops at all at places like Corinth Canal?
Yeah, well, we heard about that they were trying to get us, the fifth column, I suppose, that's what it was called at that time, and I don't know whether it was or it wasn't, but that's what we were told, the fifth column. They were trying to get us, instead of come back through Athens, to go onto the Corinth Canal, because they would have had us sewn up then, see? All sewn up. But anyway, I didn't know anything about the... I heard that paratroops had been dropped, but I had no idea whether they were or they weren't. It was just a word-of-mouth thing. But anyway, they woke up a bit and we continued down the road. Instead of going to Corinth, we went down through Athens and out the...
What was the feeling like in Athens at this point?
Wonderment, really. Those poor buggers, people didn't know where they were, what was going to happen, who was in control, you know. That's what I say, why the police were so important, you know. And they really stood up there, those policemen. I was very surprised at their attitude, you know. That was their job and they stuck with it. But the people themselves, they sort of, in that part of the thing, it seemed to me is that the people had been told what we'd be doing, because they kept right out of the way and didn't have much contact with people when we were coming through the streets in Athens, although we were in fairly close contact with the people in the little place where we evacuated from. But I never ever struck one Greek that said you shouldn't be here or anything like that, you know. They were all for us and with us and good people.
So how did you get to the Ajax? Here you are waiting for the Germans to come. What happened next?
Well, they had beach masters and they'd come along and come up and... Of course, our officers were all... And was still in control of the unit. There was never... become a rabble. It was all, you know, straight down the bloody line. That's your troop and that's your troop and that's RHQ and that's RHQ. So when they called us up, they took us down and loaded us onto barges, and the barges went across to the Ajax, and we went up the ropes up the side of the Ajax. And
when would that have been? What time?
Oh, that was in my case, it was...
Roughly, doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, the boats used to, of course, they couldn't come in until dark, and I suppose it would have been about 10 or 11 o'clock at night when I got on the Ajax.
Well, what was the feeling like going out towards the Ajax?
It was sort of a disappointment and a sense of relief at the same time. I think we were all disappointed that we were getting kicked off, the relief that the boats were there to take us away. And of course, that could have been disastrous too, if only for good circumstances. And then you're more vulnerable when a boat's sitting still in a shallow area and not much room to manoeuvre, and you're loading it up with thousands of troops. It only needs one mistake or a bomb in the wrong place, and
can you describe the Ajax to us on board, the troops on board?
The sailors were wonderful. As soon as ever we come, of course, one of our water's always a problem, you know, and they made sure we got hot cocoa and that sort of thing as soon as ever we were aboard. But all we wanted to do is, all we done was find a bit of deck space, or we're in the first floor, whatever they call it. And all we wanted to do is get our head down, which we did, and most of us just went and laid down and went to sleep, because I think, you know, the last time I saw sleep before that was about 5 days previous. You know, just and Tucker became, you know, sort of we were lucky we carried primuses of our own so we could do our personal cooking, you know, which was good.
With this lack of sleep, presumably the lack of time to really sit down and prepare yourself a proper meal.
Yeah.
How are you able to keep going?
No, it's just a matter you have to, you know. It's either it or wait and get done or something. But I think it was just that it was good regimental control. You know, what was there we got, and we got it quickly, and the bully beef and biscuits is pretty easy to hand out, sort of thing. You know, you weren't getting any elaborate meals, but you get your big hard British biscuit and a tin of bully, and it took you about 3 days to eat the biscuit anyway, to break it up. You need a hammer to break it up. Yeah, it's. But it always amazes me how, when people are well disciplined, how they fit into things, you know. They accept the fact that that's what is, and they can't do anything about it, so they make the best of what they've got to work with. And that's what I reckon happened with us, you know. We were extremely disappointed that everybody I spoke to was, you know, the fact that we had to leave. And we felt that we were leaving the people in the lurch too, because when we arrived there, we were the absolute saviours of the, you know, we're going to clean the Germans up. We kind of turned around and we got cleaned up. But it's the way it goes.
So here you are, asleep on the Ajax. What happens next?
Well, I take off, and then, of course, Luftwaffe woke up where we were, but they got away pretty quickly, and the Ajax didn't have very much trouble once it got to sea, you know, just headed from the furthest point from land that they could and full speed ahead, got out. And when we got to, then we got to Egypt, and I think they unloaded us and immediately turned around and went back again, yeah. I think I come out on the 27th or 28th, I think I come out. The sailors on board, the only thing I had to laugh about is that fellas were coming on board the Ajax, and of course they had grenades and tons of ammunition and sort of thing all on themselves, and they'd just chuck all this stuff on the deck, and the sailors weren't too happy about that, I can tell you. They'd sooner chuck it over the side than have it laying around. Yeah.
Well, some people obviously didn't get back to Alexandria.
No, that's right. Yeah.
What did you know about that situation? Obviously, some people had been dropped off at Crete on the way so that they could go back and get
I made a mistake then. What I was talking about is that when we left Crete, we went to Alexandria. When we left Porto Rafti, we went straight to... Now, see, that's how your
that's
mind
all right.
Rocks
that's
up.
That's okay.
And, we got off there, and then we didn't know where we were headed for. As a matter of fact, we thought we were going to Alexandria, but the next thing we pull is not very far away, actually, and we pull into Souda Bay. And the first thing that I spotted anyway is this big British warship sitting in Souda Bay. I thought, oh, we're a bit lucky here. And I found out later on it was the York, and it had been sunk, and it was sitting on the bottom, and it just looked like if it was, like, ready to go. Well, it was. That's all it was up with. It was sunk. They could have still fired the guns and everything on it, but she was down on the bottom. Apparently some motor torpedo people come in with torpedoes and sank it during the night. Yeah. Mm. No, I got mixed up there.
That's all right. Here you are. You're on. You thought you were going to
Alexandria. Yeah.
What was your thought when you realised you weren't in Alexandria?
Everybody saying, oh, Jesus, what's going to happen now, you know, because we had no gear. But everybody realised that, you know, other than the small arms that we were carrying ourselves, we had nothing. And that's another story, too, about all that gear that was over in Egypt, and all they sent us was derelict bloody Italian and French 75s from the 14-18 war. And they could have... I don't think that they could have taken, with the three regiments of artillery that was on Crete, I don't think with three regiments of 25 pounders the Germans couldn't have done it. They couldn't have survived, because it's a small area where, you know, they can't land just anywhere, and these guns would have cut them to bloody pieces, you know, that, with these other things. Some of the, they used to watch the bloody shells lobbing, you know, Rex would probably tell you, he's a gun sergeant. And the bloody things wouldn't explode. Blob right in the middle of a gun pit, German gun pit, and no explosion. It's, if we'd have had 25s, you know, bloody...
Well, things weren't going amazingly in North Africa either.
Oh, they weren't either, no. Because...
Were you hearing anything about...
No, very, very little. Yeah, very little. The siege was on then at Tobruk.
Had you heard of Rommel?
Yeah, I think we had. You know, he just... Well, we heard of him because he was the fellow that came into North Africa when the Germans first came into Serenica, you know, up in the Kontai Marshes. We'd heard of him, but we didn't know anything what he's... We didn't know that he was supposed to be a top general or anything like that, you know, just the name.
Of the situation that you were in, the Germans seemed to have the upper hand everywhere. How did that make you feel?
Oh, it made me feel, I think it made everybody feel things are going to be a bit tough around here, you know.
Was there ever a point from at this moment that you might not be on the right side, for instance?
Oh, no, I don't think that ever happened, you know. I think we were there for the long haul, you know, whatever happened, we'd have... Oh, I know we would have. I mean, I've got no doubt about that.
So you were never convinced that you were going to lose?
No, I was never convinced that the Germans were better soldiers than us either. Never. But
had you ever considered that you might be taken POW?
Yeah, well, I went very close, you know. Most of them got knocked off in Crete, and I went very close, and... Just that me and another fellow, two other fellows, we took off across the mountains and managed to get through where, and a funny thing, we went across and we caught up again with the people that had gone ahead of us, you know. I got sent on a mission and I got left a bit for dead, you know, that's in Crete. The 2IC sent me to find out about an ASC contingent that were down about 2 miles in a cave to find out how many personnel they had and what ammunition and arms they had. And when I was on my way, I got fired on and deterred, and it certainly took me longer to get down there than what was anticipated. You know, anyway, I finally got there. When I came back, they'd gone.
What were your positions like on Crete when you first got there?
Oh, just olive groves, nothing. We never had blankets or anything else. We just had got tarpaulins, and there'd be 20 people side by side, and we'd sleep on half the tarpaulin and pull the other half up over the top of us, you know, all into like one big bed, you know. Yeah. And the Greek hygiene wasn't exactly the best, and they used to just go and have a crap underneath the tree, you know. So,
and you were under the tree.
When we went under there, we had to go and sort of clean the joint up before we could even sit down. They never dug any holes or anything like that.
So the situation, the knowledge that you are under, well, the weapons that you have are minimal.
Yeah.
What then of the preparation? You must have known, presumably, that the Germans would be coming sometime.
Yeah, we weren't sure when, but we weren't sure how either. That was the point. I don't think anybody realised in the right at the beginning that they'd use paratroopers. But of course, immediately we went back to basic training. All the gunners and everything went back to basic training, no infantry training. And we marched and marched and marched and become fit, and really did become fit, you know. And then they got hold of these old Italian and French guns, and they gradually built up an artillery unit, and they had to go and find methods of laying guns, you know, because they had, a lot of them had no sights or anything with them. And anyway, they solved all those problems. And of course, there was only a certain number of guns and a certain number of gun crews required, and the rest were all in for tears and just back to basics. Yeah, but the gun crews themselves, they were under very bad conditions, you know. No correct means of laying their guns and faulty ammunition and manhandling these pieces with steel wheels on them and all this. Bad conditions, all right. But they done a good job for, you know. The Freiburg, the New Zealand general, was nothing but praise for them for what they, you know, what they carried out under the circumstances. But as I said before, if they had 25 pounders, there'd have been no Germans on Crete at all. And of course, one of the big things that people don't realise is that they sent an armada of reinforcements of German troops from Greece in small boats and lighters and all that sort of thing, and the British Navy sailed around amongst them, and they'd done a lot. And Sandy Luke, a mate of mine who was in the area where this happened, like opposite where it happened, he reckons there were Germans floating in there for a week after, you know, blown up and still in full march and order and that sort of thing. So they lost a lot of people in the, you know, in that first. That's probably what triggered the fact off that they use paratroopers. But after that, Hitler told, when they reported to Hitler, you know, that they'd taken Crete, he said, "Yeah, and at what cost?" And the German paratroopers were never used again during the war, and they were their elite personnel, you know. They killed hundreds of them, poor bastards, you know. When you think about it, it's the worst method of, unless you've got complete control of an area, it's the worst method of warfare that you can, because when we wake up that they had to come out of the door, that's all they concentrated on, the doorways, you know. And there'd be more fellas floating down, hanging in their straps than there were coming down alive, you know, bloody hitting the deck and dead. And when they hit the ground, they're most vulnerable, you know. They've got gather their wits and their gear and get together and become a platoon again, and they might be hundreds of yards apart by the time they hit the ground. But I tell you what, you wouldn't get me in a bloody paratrooper regiment in a million years.